Hello, Madison. Welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast, a show about clean tech, renewable energy, and the ways this rapidly growing industry is changing how we think about power. The Wisconsin Energy Broadcast is a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Now, here's your host, Heather Allen and Nan Fay.
Welcome to the ninth episode of the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast. Tonight's show features the Quilt Block Wind Farm, located 50 miles southwest of Madison, Wisconsin. The Quilt Block Wind Farm is a major achievement and part of Dairyland Power Cooperative's groundbreaking investments in renewable energy. Dairyland now has 15 solar projects, and along with the Quilt Block Wind Farm, it's producing nearly 120 megawatts of renewable energy. Before we dig into wind, though, we have some breaking news from Renew Wisconsin, and it is good news. The Wisconsin Public Service Commission made the preliminary decisions to approve the Focus on Energy's Renewable Energy Program for 2019 through 2022. So Focus on Energy, it helps people reduce energy use and save money through energy efficiency projects and renewable energy projects. Focus on Energy has been very beneficial to my family personally. When my parents downsized, they needed to get rid of an old chest freezer. Focus on Energy actually paid my dad, and then they came and took it away. It was unbelievable. And of course, Focus on Energy gave me money back on my solar panels, saving me nearly $2,500 on my solar project. Focus on Energy has a $100 million budget statewide, and it's one of Wisconsin's shining stars to promote energy efficiency and clean energy. Keeping this program humming along is critical to our clean energy future. Renew Wisconsin's executive director, Tyler Huebner, stated that today's decision to fund the Focus on Energy renewable energy incentive programs at adequate budget levels will set up the solar, geothermal, small wind, and bioenergy markets for successful four-year period. He later stated that based on recent experience, this level of funding should incentivize approximately 2,000 homes and perhaps 600 or more businesses and nonprofits as they pursue renewable energy projects throughout the next 4 years. And so with that good news, let's take a deeper dive into wind power. Our guest tonight is Vanessa Tutos, the Director of Government Affairs for EDP Renewables. She answers our questions about the Quilt Block Wind Farm. Vanessa has worked in the renewable industry for 13 years, having started off first as a developer. For the last 7 years, she worked on state-level policy. She has been with the same company in Houston, Texas the whole time, but the company has changed ownership over the years. The company began as a Texas-based wind developer, which was purchased by Goldman Sachs, later becoming Horizon Wind Energy, and finally being purchased by the Portuguese power developer Energias de Portugal. Houston is the North American headquarters of EDP, which is now the fourth largest wind power producer in the world. And EDP chose to invest here in Wisconsin. Quilt Block Wind Farm, developed by EDP, is located 50 miles southwest of Madison, entirely in Seymour Township. This is inside Lafayette County. The wind farm is now part of the area's sprawling dairy farms, corn, and soybean fields. It provides local farmers with a stable source of income in the form of landowner lease payments. The name Quilt Block Wind Farm comes from the tradition of displaying a family's unique quilt block on the side of a barn. So without any further ado, let's turn to our pre-recorded interview with Vanessa Tutos. Nan is not in the studio with me tonight, but she helped do this interview with Vanessa, and we hope you enjoy it. Why don't we get started? Can you just tell us a little bit about wind farm basics and how wind farms work today?
Sure. So wind energy is one of the predominant forms of renewable electricity. Typically, wind farms are situated in rural parts of America. We want wide open spaces. Generally, we're developing in agricultural land, so our landowners from whom we rent the land, we don't typically buy the land, so we rent for an extended period of time the land and the opportunity to put up our large wind turbines over the landscape. We have mostly in the Midwest farming property. We have a lot of ranch lands down in sort of Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. But what we do is, like I said, look for large expanses of land that are close to transmission infrastructure, because we have to essentially plug in our wind farm into the grid so that the electrons can be delivered throughout the region. We do extensive environmental studies. We want to be a very sustainable industry, and so we're very cognizant of concerns with respect to endangered species, wetlands, other types of wildlife issues. And so we do a lot of studies up front as an industry to ensure that we are not adversely impacting the natural environment. And a lot of things that we will do in accordance with those types of sustainability initiatives is, if we are, for instance, impacting the habitat of a particular species, then we will purchase conservation easements or do other things to ensure that we don't have a macro impact on ecology. We have grown from a tiny industry, you know, probably starting back in the 70s. The biggest growth trajectory happened after 1992, when the federal production tax credit was introduced. That provided a federal incentive for every megawatt hour of energy that was produced. So it really helped provide an incentive for technology that worked and that was highly efficient, because the more megawatts you could produce, the higher the value of the tax credit. And we've seen a tremendous influx as the technology has advanced and as people have become more and more familiar with renewable energy throughout the U.S. And so we as a company operate close to 6,000 megawatts of wind energy, as well as some solar projects coast to coast. We as an industry employ several hundred thousand workers. The wind turbine technician is the highest, fastest growing job in America, and it's projected to be the case for many years for the foreseeable future. So it's been really exciting to be part of the industry. And as costs have come down, both with wind and with solar, more and more of us are expanding into other renewable technologies.
Thank you.
Fascinating. Can I ask a question that I've always wondered about? The solar energy is, we think of it as fairly dependable. The sun comes up every day. Some days are cloudier than others. But wind can be sort of wildly variable. So can you say a little bit about what happens for wind generation on calm days, also on extremely windy days? And how does that matter to the transmission grid?
Well, the transmission grid is operated centrally. And so up in the Wisconsin area throughout the Midwest, there's the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, who essentially manages the entire grid and all of the generation that's on it to ensure that there is a stable balance between supply and demand. The grid operators have been balancing variable demand for a very long time. And so they have no insight into, you know, when people are going to turn their lights on and their hair dryers on and washing machines, all these kinds of things. So there are fluctuations that they're very accustomed to on the demand side. The renewable energy industry, because of the variability of the resource, you know, with solar, like you had said, you know, there's cloud coverage, so, you know, the solar is a little bit intermittent during the day. Wind can blow very hard or it can be calm. And so the grid operators have learned to accommodate that variable supply, partially because we have some very sophisticated weather prediction capabilities. And so, you know, if the wind is blowing somewhere, it doesn't just stop. There's a gradual cessation over time, and we have anemometers, meteorological towers that measure that and send that data to us as wind farm operators, as well as to the grid operators themselves. And so although it seems kind of unpredictable, because the weather in general is seemingly unpredictable a couple of days out, the grid is balanced on very short intervals. I think the largest interval is probably 15 minutes, and a lot of the balancing happens in 5-minute increments. And so it's very easy to know what's happening 5 minutes from now, and they're able to balance the grid accordingly. And so the weather patterns and the wind regime will factor into the kind of turbines we use, and it will factor into the types of information that we're constantly sending to the grid operator so that they're able to operate reliably. But it has not produce an adverse impact. And in fact, although there was some skepticism early on because of the variability of the resource, the grid operators are now incorporating upwards of 50% renewable energy into the system from time to time, and they have seen no issues with reliability.
That's very good to hear. So that was an early criticism, I know, of wind, and this was, probably 10 years ago when it was earlier on. And so it's fascinating to know that they can balance the grid at intervals of 5 to 15 minutes. That's amazing.
Right. It's a very dynamic, actively managed process. And so, and we've been pleased. And the other thing, as our technology has evolved, we have very sophisticated control technology within the turbines themselves. And we respond to signals from the grid, too. So, for instance, a wind farm is producing more energy than the grid needs. They will send us a signal to ramp it back. And we can do that, again, on, essentially a moment's notice. And so it's an active management and active communication back and forth with the grid operators. And we endeavor to be smart and reliable grid citizens so that we can continue to interconnect more.
Thank Fascinating.
You. That's really interesting. So we are really excited that you have a major wind project up and running here in Wisconsin, just 50 miles west of Madison, the Quilt Block Wind Farm. Can you tell us a little bit about how the project came together and how you picked the location? I think we'd also be interested in learning how long the project development design took and how you worked with the community.
Sure, sure. Well, this was a project that essentially predates me at the company. It was one of the first projects we prospected back in the early 2000s, and it was led by one of our senior developers at the time, who was a retired high school physics teacher who just loved wind and wanted to promote the technology throughout the Midwest. And he knew to look for, elevation, proximity to transmission, and then the most critical aspect is support of landowners. And so as he was searching the Midwest area for good places to actually install a wind farm, this is an area that kind of stood out. And he started just initially having informal conversations with landowners to really gauge the community support. And really from the beginning, we had a tremendous amount of support throughout Seymour Township. And it's been, like I said, a long time coming, for two reasons. One, because the technology was still in an evolutionary process. And so compared to the wind regime in, say, a place like Kansas, the wind speeds weren't that high. And so the technology had not yet evolved to really generate a lot of power, which made the power prices a lot higher on average than other parts of the country. So the technology caught up, while at the same time, more and more companies, utilities, other types of customers became interested in procuring renewable energy. So we were constantly marketing the project, and ultimately we settled on this offtake agreement that we have with Dairyland. But the entire process, start to finish, doesn't necessarily take 15 years, but in that time, we erected Met Towers to study the wind. We conducted the environmental and wildlife assessments that I mentioned earlier. We conducted the studies necessary to interconnect the project into the transmission grid, into the MISO grid. We identified potential customers, and of course, throughout the time, we're signing up landowners. We are going through the permitting process because we did have to have a local permit to build a project. And then it was a continual educational process where we were very upfront, and we, had aspirations to build the project sooner than later, and the timing just didn't work until we got the project built just last year. We had some challenges along the way. So the recession caused energy demand to go down back, in the 2008 fiscal crisis time. So, that was a challenge. In 2010, the Wisconsin legislature did not vote to expand the renewable energy standards. So there was some concern about whether or not there was much appetite for more wind in the state. They also allowed Canadian hydro projects to count toward the RPS, which you could say diluted the amount of wind that would be available for in-state wind there in Wisconsin. We had a couple of Wisconsin projects that were canceled or suspended because there had been some local opposition. So a lot of things were happening at the state level more broadly, but the community support that we had sustained us throughout that entire period. And like I said, we continued to market the project. We continued to meet with landowners. And we had very high aspirations to build a project someday, and thankfully someday did come.
We're grateful for that. One quick question that you may or may not feel comfortable answering is, from a landowner's perspective, they're renting space to the project for the wind turbine, correct?
Correct.
And what can they expect as an annual rental for that, just as a ballpark?
Yeah, so typical rule of thumb is that we're seeing on average about $10,000 per year per wind turbine installed on the property. And we also pay over the development period of time just to have access to the land. So there was income generated over the 15-year development process on the order of many millions, actually, to landowners who participated. And then to the extent they have roads or transmission lines to their property, there's compensation for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And do you find in those conversations that that people are generally open to hosting turbines, or what kind of issues do you encounter?
We found a lot of openness in this area, and that's been my experience in many parts of the country. There are places where folks are a little more hesitant. It could be because they're just misinformed about wind energy. There are some concerns folks have raised that we're able to dispel with factual information and with studies. But particularly in these productive agricultural environments, folks who own the land, who work the land on a day-to-day basis and for generations over time, know the commodity price fluctuation, the weather patterns change. There's a lot of volatility in what they do. And so the fact that they have an opportunity to have a steady stream of income over the life of a project, which is 25-plus years, is really compelling. And for a lot of landowners, they'll say, you know, it's allowed them to keep the farm in the family, because what we find is a lot of parcelization of farms as folks, you know, are just not able to make ends meet as certain commodity prices collapse, and they may or may not be able to withstand a downturn. We have folks whose kids want to come back and work the land but often choose not to just because they've witnessed how difficult it's been for their parents and grandparents. Now, again, this gives them a steady income stream where those kids who want to return can actually do so. And it provides a new employment opportunity. As I mentioned, the wind turbine technician is the fastest growing job in the country. And so some of these children of the farming communities are coming back to actually work on the wind farms and become those turbine technicians, and they're able to stay in the rural parts of the country where, you know, frankly, jobs are not growing all that fast otherwise.
No, that's fascinating. Thank you.
Speaking of the farming communities, I think you mentioned that your agreement is with Dairyland Power. So if I'm understanding you right, you're selling the power back to Dairyland, and then the Dairyland Power Cooperative is using that energy to power the farmers that are members of the cooperative.
Right, right. And Dairyland serves, I think the number is 600,000 rural customers across not just Wisconsin, but also Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois. And so this has been in response to their own customer demand and some of the smaller customers they have who have chosen to pursue renewable energy for both sustainability reasons and for the fact that the costs have come down so precipitously that it's a very cheap power alternative.
Right. And my understanding is that this wind farm is part of their larger effort, which also includes a number of solar projects.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's very helpful. Can you tell us a little bit about the who your local government partners were? Did you we read on the project description that millions of dollars have gone back to local governments. Is that through just regular property taxes and the value of the land is increasing, or how are you working with local governments, and what sort of financial transactions are happening with local government?
Sure, sure. So the primary local entities are Lafayette County and Seymour Township. We also engaged very closely with the city of Darlington and their city council. But from a permitting perspective, it was a prior two. And per Wisconsin statute, because we're a renewable energy project, we are exempt from paying property taxes. So in lieu of local property taxes, we pay the calculation is about $230,000 per year to the county and about $165,000 per year to the township. And then they're able to utilize those resources for, you know, local projects, for education, for roads, for really anything they choose.
Great, great.
Well, those payments go into the general fund then?
That's my understanding, yes. And then in addition to those payments, of course, we have the direct landowner payments. And then because we're based there locally, we've brought through our permanent employees some new families to the area who they, you know, will pay their own property taxes. And we have, you know, payroll taxes and all the typical business taxes that are paid on any enterprise. And most of that money does get recirculated back in the community.
That's great. Thank you. So tell us also a little bit more about the jobs. You talked about the wind turbine operators. What other jobs do you expect to be permanent jobs as a result of Quilt Block Wind Farm?
Sure. So as of now, we have from EDP Renewables, we have a site administrator, we have a lead technician and a site manager there at the site itself. And then Vestas, who is our turbine supplier, also provides a site manager, a lead technician, and they have four technicians on the ground as we speak.
Okay, thank you. So those are generally folks that came in who are technical experts from outside.
Right.
Okay. Okay, great. Dan, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I want to ask just sort of, you know, paint a picture of what one of these wind turbines look like. Like, how big is it? How long are the blades? How tall is it? And then how nearby would the next one be?
Sure, sure. So these wind turbines are Vestas V110 2-megawatt machines. So the V110 means the 110 is the length of the rotor diameter. So from one blade tip to the other, it's 110 meters or approximately 360 feet. Each individual blade is about 54 meters long or about 177 feet. Up to the hub, they are 95 meters tall, which is about 311 feet. And how far apart they're spaced really is a matter of topology. So you have a waking effect if there's anything in front of the wind turbine that's interrupting the flow of air. So the rule of thumb is to have the wind turbines about 7 rotor diameters apart. So in our case, it's about 700 feet apart, a bit more than a half a mile. But it's also going to depend on the prevailing wind direction. So they're a little bit closer side by side, but as they face into the wind, whatever the prevailing wind direction is in that part of the country, or not even that part of the state, they're going to be a bit farther apart so that they can maximize the free flow of air.
And can they be aimed in any way? I mean, do they have the ability to rotate a little bit to go to face into the prevailing wind?
They do. They automatically face into the prevailing wind. And these particular turbines have a cut-in speed of about 3 meters per second, so a little over six and a half miles per hour. And they will turn to face whichever direction the wind is blowing. And then between that speed and about 20 meters per second or 45 miles per hour, the wind turbine blades themselves turn at a constant speed, usually between 15 and 20 revolutions per minute. I'm not quite sure with these specific machines, but they do rotate at a constant speed, and they're designed to also, if there are severe wind gusts or if the wind is blowing stronger than that, they can yaw to, you know, maintain their rotation. They also have some electronic controls that help reduce torque in high winds, and there's some electronic braking capability as well. So they're designed for a maximum wind speed so that, you know, occasionally you will have some major gusts, and if the winds are blowing too high, then they essentially shut themselves off.
They sound like very, very intelligent turbines.
They do.
Yeah, it's a critical part of the smart grid, right? Everything has to be smart to work together. Well, thank you for that. I know that our producer, Doug Allen, has been trying to get an answer on the rotational speed of windmills, so glad to finally have that. So let's talk greenhouse gas emissions. How many tons of carbon are displaced annually as a result of the wind farm?
So based on Wisconsin's energy mix, we calculate this in terms of how much conventional generation our wind farm would displace. And so what we've calculated is that we would displace about 500 million, million pounds of CO2 emissions per year. And, you know, one of the equivalencies you'll see is, you know, taking cars off the road. So this would be equivalent to taking about 50,000 cars off the road.
That's very exciting. Thank you so much.
That's a good translation of that number, too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure.
So do you have plans for any additional wind farms in Wisconsin or the Midwest coming up?
We do. We actually have a very robust development pipeline. It includes projects in Wisconsin, also in Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, Indiana. We are actually actively developing and hope to expand the Quilt Block project. We have a number of landowners who are interested in seeing an expansion of the existing facility. Our limiting factor right now is transmission availability. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we're working on as a company and through the industry is transmission expansion. There's one key transmission line right now that's under deliberation called the Cardinal Hickory Creek Line. Once that is built, we'll be able to expand Quilt Block and potentially build other projects in the state. And we're also looking at solar development opportunities there in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's right. Okay, thank you. I understand that the wind farm will save 150 million gallons of water each year. I'm assuming that's because you're talking about the water that is used in coal-fired generation and that water is not used in wind energy generation. Is that why we're saving water with this project?
That's exactly right. Okay. Coal, gas, and nuclear power all require a lot of water, both for the turbine generation, steam turbine generation, as well as, you know, providing cooling water to the thermal generators. And so, again, based on Wisconsin's energy mix, we look at what's displaced and identify the amount of water used by those facilities and then, you know, sort of back calculate how much water that saves.
That's great. That's great to know. Okay.
Vanessa, is there anything that we didn't ask you about that you would like our listeners to know?
Actually, yes. As a policy person, I always want to make sure that the most accurate information is out there and so that constituents are able to talk about the benefits that wind farms bring to their communities. And there's a common misconception that renewable energy is expensive or that it's more expensive than other types of generation. It's true that that used to be the case, but as I mentioned, the wind costs have come way, way down due to the technology improvements. We've got taller towers, we have longer blades, lighter materials, sophisticated control technology, so we're able to optimize very well. And the statistic I have of late is that wind prices fell 66% in the last 7 years. So we have one of the most affordable forms of electricity, even without the federal tax credit. And in fact, the one federal tax credit we enjoy, the production tax credit, we call it the PTC, is currently being phased out. And after 2020, no new wind projects will receive any kind of federal incentives whatsoever. And at that point, we will be unique. Across the energy sector, we'll be the only energy resource receiving no federal subsidies. So I often like to say that I would invite the rest of the industry to also ramp down their own subsidies so that we can all compete on a level playing field. But it's pretty exciting to know that we've come such a long way in such a short time that we need no subsidies to be competitive, even with subsidized forms of generation.
So wind stands on its own.
After 2020, it will.
That's exciting. That's exciting. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tudos, for taking the time to talk with us today and for all your work here in Wisconsin. And I hope that we can continue to talk about the other projects that you have coming forward and the general mix that EDP is working on around the world.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, please keep in touch if you have a new project that gets the go ahead in Wisconsin. Let us know and we can pursue it with you.
We'll do it.
Absolutely.
If you have any questions, please don't ever hesitate to reach out.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.